two power points up.
All right, y'all. Sorry about the delay here. The conference is not being recorded. I guess for the record, okay, this is 9/11 Truth Teleconference for 12:30:15. Craig, please call the roll.
Okay, I'm going to read this. Hold on one second. Let me just list the names. I hope I have everybody. All right. Craig McKee, Lynn Bradbury, Alan Rubin, Wayne Kosky, Barton Bruce, Adam Syed, Barbara Honegger, Roger Borey, Frank Kolopko, Claire Joy, Rico Baker, Lorenzo Fine, Mike Carey, Pat McGuire, Susan Clark, Jane Clark, Cheryl Curtis, Mike Booth, Ben Collett, Richard Krushnick, Dave Schlesinger, Al Magaletta, Dave Noble, Jane Milliken, Dale Simmons, Sue Serpa, Rich O'Coin, Dick Attlee, Robin Horton, Jim Swartz, James Hufford, David Cole, and Gary Price. Is that everybody?
There was a chime that came on as my last name was being spoken, so Lorenzo Fine, just to make sure that it made it through.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, thanks.
And perhaps someone just came on, you?
Hi, do we have another call?
Sorry, this is Bill Jacoby calling in.
And this is Wayne Kosky.
Okay, Wayne Kosky and Bill
Jacoby.
Bill Jacoby, okay.
We've got a echo here.
Ken, when you speak, there's a double. Oh, also when I speak, there's a doubling.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I think Bill Jacoby has to go on mute.
Bill Jacoby, okay.
I just did, Wayne. I'm going to say I'm mute. I'm not going to say anything.
Okay. All right. Are we still getting the echo?
Are we getting
no.
the echo on my voice?
No.
I guess not.
No.
Okay. All right,
no,
great.
Not good.
All right, so let's proceed then with our first item on the agenda, which is always to approve the minutes from the previous meeting. Any objections to approving the minutes from the previous meeting is circulated by Crane, by Craig, and copy on the draft agenda. Any objections to that? Hearing none, then we'll take some minutes for approval from the last meeting and move on to tonight's draft agenda. Any objections to approving tonight's draft agenda as circulated in the draft agenda? Okay, hearing none, then we'll take the draft agenda for approval and proceed to the first meeting, or the first item of tonight's agenda, which is our debate. The two parties in tonight's debate are Wayne Kosky, a PE of 911outreach.org, and Barbara Honegger. The proposition for tonight's debate is that a large plane impacted the Pentagon. Craig has volunteered to take the timing for tonight's debate, and so we'll proceed then with Wayne getting ready for the affirmative. Wayne, you ready?
This is Barb. May I just ask Craig? Craig, would you be willing to let all both of us know when there's, regardless of the segment, when there's 2 minutes left and 1 minute left?
That was part of the arrangement. Ken, you mentioned that you wanted me to do it a certain way. I don't know if you want me to, if that's flexible or whatever. You asked me to do it for 1 minute for the first thing and then 30 seconds for the other one.
Yeah, the 7 minute deconstructor will have a 1 minute warning, and the other items following that will each have a 30 second warning. If you're called for time, you may finish your sentence, but you shouldn't take more than a few seconds to do so. Otherwise, we'll have to look at time penalties if people go over time, okay?
A time penalty? What happens to it?
You don't want to know, Barbara. You don't want to know.
Yeah. You don't want to know.
Bad.
Okay. All right. So if we're ready, then, Wayne, are you ready to proceed with the affirmative?
Yes, I'm ready. And if you want, you can start the clock coming one.
Yeah. Give me 5 seconds so it's nicely on the six. Okay.
I'm sorry. Which six?
Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. Wayne, your time starts now. Go ahead.
Yes. I want to thank the teleconference organizers for this opportunity to debate what occurred at the Pentagon. Before I begin, I want to remind people that we'll be talking from a series of slides with page numbers. These slides are available in the meeting announcement, and if people should go on mute, it's quite distracting. A large plane hit the Pentagon is the most supportable hypothesis. Before I get into the details of the evidence, it is imperative that I share some background on this presentation. While there is a large amount of agreement about what happened at the World Trade Center, the Pentagon is much more divisive. The concept of this debate began after an email thread dealing with the implications of confirmation bias. That is, biases where a listener accepts information that supports one own perspective and ignores other information that does not fit. As I researched 9/11, I have found these biases within myself. I've observed that once I settle into a perspective, it is difficult to change. In the past, I adopted positions as a result of listening to statements of respected individuals, people who I believe should have done their homework before advocating a position. In order to change a perspective, a listener needs to hear something new and unexpected. They need to investigate it with an open mind. I hope some of you will hear something new and ask yourself some probing questions. The material in this debate was the result of my having to carefully evaluate what I would say in a cable access show. I would be presenting what I will call my statements, and I'd be saying them in public, so I needed to make sure that they were supportable. I wasn't going to be able to fall back on, well, someone said it, but I didn't look into it. Such a weak position would have undermined the whole series I was preparing. Initially, I was going to lay out the different hypotheses for what happened at the Pentagon and go through the evidence. My intention was to ridicule the large plane hypothesis. However, as I developed the material for the program, I found that I could not. All the evidence I found was either supportive of a large plane or neutral. There was nothing from the witnesses and the photographs of that day that contradicted a large plane impact. I found this very disturbing. I had to question whether the people in the 9/11 truth movement I respected had actually looked at the evidence. So let's begin. Let's go to slide 3. Suddenly, without warning, a single large aircraft flew over the stop traffic on Washington Boulevard on the west side of the Pentagon. The plane flew low to the ground, coming from the southwest over Columbia Pike while descending continuously. The large plane remained above the pristine lawn until it impacted a Tower 14. The engines impacted a retaining wall and the diesel generator. A distance between these impact points was approximately equal to the distance between the engines of a 757. Most of the airframe structure crashed into the first floor wall. The impacts created a huge fireball with a lot of debris traveling northward and some falling onto Washington Boulevard. The impact was seen by many witnesses from the west side of the Pentagon. Slide 4, resulting damage. There was an 80-foot opening in the first floor wall. There was a 16-foot opening in the second floor wall. There was limited aircraft debris outside of the building. Most of the visible debris was north of the impact point. However, there was very little debris in front of the impact point and no debris south of the impact point. As we all know, the location of the debris within the Pentagon itself was not documented in any way except the incompatible locations of the cockpit voice recorders and the flight data recorders. Slide 5, the damage. Evidence shows that the aircraft momentum was sufficient to knock out an 80-foot section of the west wall. Many of the first floor columns were missing, bent, or stripped. This would be consistent with the impact of something with a substantial mass. Impacts with the light poles would have been survivable. The plane only needed to travel 950 feet in 1.25 seconds. You know, possibly the plane was targeting the second floor and the aircraft lost more altitude than expected as a result of hitting the light poles and thus impacted the first floor. We don't really know that, what they were really targeting. Slide 6, witnesses. Please go on mute. Okay? After about 180 witnesses were on record near the Pentagon shortly after the event, Details differ, but most report one aircraft flying towards the Pentagon. Distant witnesses from Roslyn and St. Barnabas Road report a plane impacting. They saw it clearly from a distance. The only other aircraft seen immediately after the impact was the well-documented C-130. After the initial event, witnesses would have been hyper-alert for any other unusual activity, but there wasn't. There were no other planes except the C-130. These 180 witnesses are adequate for establishing in broad terms what happened. Slide 7. The issues that I'm not addressing. There's very little time in this debate to cover the many topics about a single large plane. Because I'm not arguing that the, quote, large plane was AE-77, I will not address the radar tracking. It's not necessary because, as others have pointed out, another plane could have been substituted. The flight data and cockpit voice recorders are of the wrong type for commercial American Airlines aircraft in service in 2001. AA insists their flight data recorders were solid state. The data from the alleged flight recorders, therefore, is the suspect, but they are not even critical to the question, did a large aircraft hit the Pentagon? Accurate security camera videos would be nice if they documented the impact without raising questions related to their authenticity. Issues like the September 12th date and the image overlap problem raised by Massimo Mazzucco in his new
Harbor.
Thank you. Point those out. For me, the most troubling aspect is that the aircraft is completely horizontal in the final seconds. This is inconsistent with the observations of the witnesses who report a continuous bypass with only some amount of banking, not leveling off. Remembering, leveling off would have added unnecessary forces to the plane's already overtaxed structure, risking a successful completion of the mission and reducing the airspeed, just as the engines were being ramped up in the final seconds before impact to maximize the kinetic energy when the plane hit the building. I will not cover how the aircraft could have been controlled. I believe the 9/11 truth community is in agreement that Hani Honduras could not have done this. This ends my constructive stage of the debate. Thank you.
All right.
All right.
Thank you, Wayne. Barbara, you ready with the negative?
Yes.
Okay. Time starts now. Go ahead.
Time starts now. Thank you so much, everybody. I've been hoping for a debate like this for years, and now it's finally happening, so thank you so much for everyone being here. I'm going to start out by summarizing what I call the Pentagon official story light, and this is the position that Wayne takes in this debate. And that position, official story light, is at the nose of a large plane. We agree it was almost certainly not Flight 77, but the nose of a large plane hit at a specific location. This is in his Flight 16. That it hit in Wedge 1 at a specific column, column 14, that it penetrated the wall and caused approximately 90% to 95% of the interior damage only on the ground floor, just a very small amount on the second floor. That is Wayne's position in his slide. So we are now going to point out that the official story itself is identical to this, except that the official story claims that that same plane was indeed Flight 77. That's the only major difference. So going to my slides, and I hope everyone has them up, I'd like to point out that at the very first Pentagon press briefing, which was September 12th, the day after the attack, there was no mention whatsoever of the official story of Flight 77 or even of a 757 hitting the building, which is quite shocking and surprising. It's obvious that there first had to be a lot of cleanup of non-supporting evidence before the official story was finally released at the Pentagon press briefing, officially on September 15th. And, of course, the first cleanup of non-supporting evidence was the collapse of the wall over the alleged impact point to begin with on 9/11 itself a little after 10 a.m. in the morning. My slide 5, I hope everyone has up those slides, and if not, you can listen to the audio and see them later. The alleged plane penetration path, just so that you see it, it's that white arrow, and you will notice that it's almost all in Wedge 1, with just a little bit into Wedge 2 in the C-ring, and April Gallup's death, just for the record, is over in Wedge 2 in the outer E-ring, not anywhere close to the alleged plane penetration path. So So going to slide 7, I'm now going to demonstrate that the wall damage, well, I should say that the claim, the main claim of both the official story and official story light, which is the position of the other debater in this debate, is the claim that all of the physical evidence lines up perfectly, based mainly upon the claim that the first floor wall damage centered on column 14 in wedge 1 could have physically, could have, not even was, but could have been caused by a large plane impact. I'm now going to demonstrate that the wall damage and the internal damage inside the building, as cataloged and recorded by the Pentagon Building Performance Report, could not possibly have been due to any large impact at column 1, column 14, and wedge 1. The Pentagon Building Performance Report, based on the analysis of the interior damage after the fact, states that the top of the fuselage was at most only 20 feet above the ground. The most important fact proving that a large plane, no large plane, 757 or otherwise, could have hit at column 14 in wedge 1 is the fact that at the official story alleged speed of over 550 miles per hour, coming in effectively level just above the ground, it could not possibly have gotten any lower due to the ground effect than one half of the wingspan of 124-foot 757 or comparably sized large plane, meaning that the lowest that it could have impacted the building would have been approximately 62 feet above the ground or into at the lowest, the fourth floor of the five floors. And yet, the after impact damage report shows that almost 100% of the damage is in the ground floor. So that alone proves that that cannot be the case. Now I'd like to move to slide 10. And you will see a red circle on slide 10, which represents the official story light as well as the official story alleged impact point coming in at a diagonal angle of the nose of a large plane. And what you're going to notice there is that the second floor column is actually still in place, as is at least on the right side of that T on the second floor with the blacked out windows, the missing windows on either side, that at least on the right side that the second floor is still in place. That red circle is literally the bullseye of the both official story light and official story alleged impact point, and the fact that the vertical column is still in place and the floor on the right at the very least is absolute proof that no large plane going at almost 560 miles per hour could possibly have caused that, have resulted in the vertical column in the right floor of the second floor still being in place. Physically impossible. The 6-foot cable spools had to be cleared. When you go to slide 12, you see that for yourself because, as you'll see, that the plane is 156 foot feet in length and that the spools were much closer to the wall. The plane coming in level absolutely would have had to clear the 6-foot high spools. All right, in slide 13, a very important slide of a composite photograph by a colleague, a digital photo analyst colleague of Terry Misson. And,
1 minute.
Now, Wade and I, what was that?
1 minute.
Oh, thank you. You will see that Wayne and I actually disagree over the amount of space. He says that there's 80 feet between of missing space, and I say 50, and we can get into that later during the rebuttal. Okay. The windows as well as the columns load out and not in, which is physically impossible. If hit by a huge impactor going at 560 miles per hour. And moving on to the light poles, it's physically impossible that the light poles could have been hit by the leading edge of the wings that still were full of jet fuel. They were fine fuel bombs. And those wings not being sheared off at a very minimum, non-explosive jet fuel pouring out over the lawn, which did not happen. And as we know, the story that was given by a critical witness, Lloyd England, is definitely false. So I will continue the next segment. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. All right. We're ready to move on to our first rebuttal, and that will be Wayne to rebut the... I'm sorry, it'll be... Wayne to rebut the... negative. Go ahead, Wayne.
Yes. Thank you, Barbara, for going through all this. I will start with slide 16 in my data in my pack. The large plane impact is really supportable, and the plane impacted at an angle of 42 degrees, knocked down the newly hardened wall. If we go to slide 17, we have the overview of where things were located. We've got the column 14 right in front of the tree, or right behind the tree. We've got the gauss, the retaining wall. We've got the diesel construction generator on the right-hand side. And those are the key things that we're going to be taking a look at. Slide 18 shows the flight impact. It comes over the cloverleaf. If we go to slide 19, which has shows where Daryl Donnelly was when he took a lot of the pictures, many of those are those that we are actually going to be using here. And you can see that where he was located, and you saw the plane come from right over his driver's side, and you can see where he was located in order for him to be taking all the photographs that he did in the 5 minutes or so that he was there. So let's move on to slide 22. This is an impact point showing the Pentagon, the five rings. We'll skip past that. Slide 23 shows a very level flight, American Airlines 767 approaching the Pentagon, just showing from a scale the issue of ground effect, as I've been told, is not relevant when you are flying with your flaps down and traveling at these speeds here. So that is a point that we may need to clarify with others. Slide 24 is the pristine lawn. You can see that there's no degree of significance in front of the wall. The engines were 4.5 feet below the fuselage, but that still left about 3 feet of space. Now, if we go to slide 25, we have the dimensions. Barbara had mentioned the impact point of 20 feet above the ground. That was the ASC's estimate, based on 90 to 95% of the interior damage in the first ground level. The 767's body is 12.5 feet. There's about 7.5 feet below the aircraft body if it's impacted at 20 feet, and the engine extends 4.5 feet below the aircraft body, leaving about 3 feet for clearance, which is why there's no markings on the lawn, with the exception of hitting the retaining wall and the diesel generator. Slide 26 basically shows where the impact point is, and when we go to slide 27, we can see the location of the debris, if it was flying north, because there's northward momentum of the aircraft. Slide 28 shows that if there had
30 seconds.
Thank you. Slide 28 shows that if it had been a straight-on impact, it would have, explosives or something else, the debris would have come out in all directions, and that's not what we see. Slide 29 shows the plane impact area against the wall, and if you actually look at the images that Barbara has said are columns that are sticking up out of the ground, you can actually see fire underneath them. So I think that's where I'll stop for now. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Wayne. Barbara, it's your turn now to refute the positive. You have 4 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay.
Wait a second, Ken. Ken.
Okay.
I have that as 3 minutes. Oh, I'm sorry. Never mind.
No.
Four minutes.
Before we begin, there's rattling on the phone. Could everybody be sure and mute before we begin?
Yes. If you can, please mute your phone if you're not one of the contestants here. Please mute your phone because we are having to get an interference here.
Tell them it's by star 6.
Star 6. Star 6 to mute your phone if you're not one of the contestants. Thank you.
Yeah. And I would request that Wayne do that as well, because when he was speaking, there was a lot of static.
Okay. Well, it seems like the static has disappeared, in my view, but maybe others can still hear it, but I don't hear any further static.
Okay.
Okay. Go ahead, Barbara. Thank you.
All right. Yes, I'm going to actually continue with my slides, and the reason is because I take the negative position that a lot of the planes hit the Pentagon at column 14, which is Wayne's position, the official story line. I'm going to continue with my slides because my negative position is all rebuttal. I would like to say that the ground effect is relevant for a plane going at high speed, any large plane close to the ground. Ralph Kolstad flew the physical plane that the official story claims was Flight 77 on 9/11, and he said he absolutely could not do so himself. All right, so I'm going to my slide 20, and slides 20 and 21 and subsequent slides are a demonstration that the evidence that a large plane could not have penetrated the newly hardened Wedge 1 wall. And the one military test that we have effectively shows that nothing penetrated the wall. And you can see that in slide 22 and slide 23. And the effect of that is nothing like the fireball in the famous five-frame fireball. I'm going to move on to just pointing out that the official story and official story lie also depend upon the claim that there was only one major explosion that was simultaneous with an alleged impact at column 14 and wedge 1. And the slides beginning with slide 26, going through a number of slides, prove that there were multiple explosions independent of any possible impact. All right, and then we are going to move to the alleged exit hole in the C-ring. Now, Wayne does not address this, but others who advocate for the official story line do. And it's very important to note that that cannot be true, that even if a plane was able to get, a large plane was able to get through the external wall, that it couldn't have been responsible only for damage through the alleged C-ring and so-called exit hole, because I have cataloged, including personal interviews with witnesses inside the Pentagon, and have published that there was major destruction, fire, and death in the inner two rings beyond the C-ring as well. All right, I'm going to go to, I know that Wayne doesn't address it, but others in the movement who take the position of official story like do, the absolute inauthenticity and accuracy and relevance of the FDR data. And I'm glad to see that Wayne does agree, as do, as I understand it, the consensus panel, the position that that I take. That is based upon the press release by American Airlines itself shortly after the attacks, that the alleged cockpit voice recorder, and therefore also flight data recorder, because they're both in the tail of the plane, cannot have been from any American Airlines plane that was flying on 9/11. It's the wrong kind. It was a solid-state version, and the cockpit voice recorder that was allegedly found in the rubble was a magnetic tape recorder, a very different kind. All right. Then I'm going to move on. The authenticity, accuracy, and relevance of the radar data has been, pointed out to be problems almost certainly false by Robin Horton, who is on this call, and I give the site that he gave me for that. That leaves the witnesses. And the interesting thing about the witnesses, yes, there are about 180 witnesses, but because they're all over the map, you have to, everyone who looks seriously at the Pentagon has to sift through the witnesses to find the relevant and most credible witnesses. I have done that, and I find that the path is a north path, not a south path. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Barbara. Wayne, you have 3 minutes for counter rebuttal. Go ahead.
Yes, first of all, I think we have to talk about the ground effect issue. And as I understand the argument, a plane can't get within, can't hit the ground if it's going fast. And so, therefore, it seems that the best thing a pilot can do if he's got it in trouble is go fast and get near the ground. because that means that he can't hit the ground. That sounds to me about as absurd if you actually stop to think about it. Now, a ground effect, when you're trying to land, with your flaps and all those issues is a factor. But if you want to trim the plane and run the front of the plane onto the runway, I'm absolutely convinced that you can do it at any speed you want. All you got to do is be prepared for it. So let's continue on where I think I left off at slide 29. This is the alleged impact point with the plane superimposed on top of it. Again, I invite you to take a look at the other photos that I don't have in here that show that there's actually you can actually see fire underneath the things that are in fact columns that are banged inward and not columns from the floor that are going outward. If we go to slide, let's go to slide 31. Which has the opening after the fire is extinguished. We have 80 feet that are open, and you can actually see some of the columns that are kind of hanging down. They've been impacted from the right and the front, and they've been pushed to the left and back. And that's the position that they're in. And as I said, you can see fire underneath them when you look at some of the live fire pictures. If we go take a look at the slide 32, you can see you can count the columns. Each one is 10 feet apart. Pardon? So, and if we go to slide 33, what we have, you can see the diagram here for where the columns are. Slide 34 and 35 describe the mass of the building wall, the 80 feet. It's 96 tons of structural mass being impacted by 110 tons of
30 seconds.
Mass. And that 100 and what you're having here is people say it's like a beer can hitting the wall. Well, in fact, what you're seeing is not a beer can hitting the wall, but a beer can hitting another beer can, equal mass, effectively. So one flying at 500 miles an hour. Slide 36 just basically shows the extent of the opening, and slide 38 or 37 shows what a plane infrastructure
looks like.
Okay, so what you're going to see is that the very top of you'll see a very little structural material. Everything is down below, and so that's the top part what damaged the second floor. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Wayne. Okay, Barbara, you have 3 minutes to rebut, Wayne. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you so much. I would just like to point out that just prior to this debate, Jim Chester sent me, and thank you, Jim. I don't think he's on the call, but he may be listening to this recording later. Jim Chester sent a very important article by an aeronautical engineer that I will send the link to, and with everyone's permission, perhaps you can put it in the minutes from this debate, that the ground effect definitely does apply, and that the lowest that a plane of a wingspan approximately of a 757 or any comparably sized large plane could not get to the ground any closer than approximately the fourth floor up, and yet the Pentagon Building Performance Report, the American Society of Structural Engineers found that almost 100% of the damage was on the ground floor. So, Ralph Cole said flew this very physical plane that the official story claims is Flight 77, and he said absolutely that the ground effect does apply and that he could not have flown the plane into the ground floor. And I would take his word for it, seeing as he flew that very physical plane. Okay, what I'd like to do now for the remaining time here is I have a list of rebuttals of some of Wayne's main points. I've made many of them, but there are also some others that I'd like to make. Okay. The next is that he claims that the plane hit the diesel generator. This could not be true if it was anywhere close to the official story alleged impact time of almost 9:38, because we know the exact time that the diesel generator was hit. Because it caused the large billowing black smoke cloud And the initiation time of that is absolutely proven by the digital clock that is embedded in the DoubleTree Hotel security camera video of 9:34 and 10 seconds, which is many minutes before the alleged impact time of the building. And the even Wayne claims in his PowerPoint slides that a large plane, the part of the right wing or the right engine of a large plane allegedly hit the diesel trailer and caused the billowing black smoke cloud.
30 seconds.
Okay. Wayne claims that there's an 80-foot opening. I see only a 50-foot opening. He also claims in his slides that the second floor alleged opening is 16 feet wide. It absolutely isn't, because the vertical column of column 14 on the second floor is still in place. And the column to column is 10 feet. So the maximum width with that vertical column still in place is only 10 feet. It is not 16 feet on the second floor. Thank you.
Time's up.
Thank you, Barbara. Okay, Wayne, you have 90 seconds for second rebuttal.
Yeah, so I don't know where to begin. So I'll just simply say that the DoubleTree video clock, while it is it's not reliable, I don't know how many people have their digital clocks on their stoves and whatever set at the wrong time, off by a few minutes. There's no guarantee that that is an official time. And I've had this debate with Tim Michael, and he's agreed that that is not likely. Secondly, I want to talk about the schools that were in the flight path. The one thing that we do not know about those schools, as shown on slide 40, is where they were in the beginning. Everyone talks about the reason you can't get a plane close to the ground because of the turbulence. We don't know where these schools were. They could have simply been standing up nearby, and the turbulence would have sucked them in to the area behind where the plane was, and that's where they would have ended up. So they didn't have to be hopped over. Again, I'll say that the ground effect is something that can be compensated for by a highly vetted flight path that was done professionally. So I think that hitting the ground, maybe Ralph can't do it, but I bet the people who would program flight paths to put his plane on the ground knows.
Okay, thank you. Barbara, you have 90 seconds for your last rebuttal.
Okay, actually, I'd like to take this time to point out what, with my best understanding, Wayne and I agree on. We agree that a single, only one low-flying plane was destroyed at the Pentagon, because zero witnesses saw two or more low-flying planes approach the building simultaneously or near simultaneously, so that's important. We disagree on the flight path and whether it hit the building at the official story location. We agree that it was not Flight 77 based on a number of reasons. We agree that the alleged debris found inside the Pentagon is not documented. We agree that there was a major internal ground floor explosion independent of any impact. And you can see that in Wayne's slide 39. It's also in my behind the smoke curtain. And we agree that the plane was almost certainly not under the control of the official story alleged pilot, Connie Honjour, or any other pilot, and was likely under some kind of remote control. I would like to point out in closing that the main finding of my work in Behind the Smoke Curtain is pre-placed inside explosives, the same as the real story at the World Trade Center, where the plane approach and visible destruction of a plane is the mere cover cause for the subsequent collapse, in the case of the World Trade Center at the Twin Towers and in the Pentagon, of the wall section of which one. But it's important to remember the principle of severability.
Time's up.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Wayne, you have 2.5 minutes for a final summary. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I've heard some of our 9/11 truth colleagues say that support of a large plane impact at the Pentagon should be considered, quote, as an organized effort to steer the truth movement away from some of the strongest evidence that we have that 9/11 was an inside job. So I ask, is my supporting the evidence based on observations of a large plane impact really synonymous with supporting the official story that Connie Honjour, manly Kelly flew AA-77 into the Pentagon after overpowering the pilot and took everyone by surprise. It does not. Supporting a large plane impact does not mean that the large plane was AA-77. It does not mean that the large plane was piloted by Hani Hanjour. It does not mean that the Pentagon command structure was taken by surprise. It does not mean that NORAD should be excused from its failure to respond with fighter planes according to standard procedures. And it does not mean that we have thrown away, quote, our strongest evidence that we have that 9/11 was an inside job. When I've gone back to the original source materials for 9/11, I've heard people talk about explosions at the World Trade Center. The media censorship stopped all that discussion about the explosives by the second day. When I've gone back to the Pentagon coverage of 9/11, I have not heard any raw footage that clearly suggests an alternative to a large aircraft flying along Columbia Pike. Nothing from that day clearly supports the north of Citadel flight path. Such descriptions would have been prominent in the statements by witnesses if they were true. So our own confirmation bias, a desire to show that 9/11 was an inside job, apparently leads some in our 9/11 truth movement to adopt the wishful hypothesis that are not supported by the evidence and to ridicule those who have actually looked at the evidence. In conclusion, I want to ratchet down the volume of those who say that no large aircraft hit the Pentagon. At a minimum, the evidence is very supportive of this hypothesis, and in fact, it is actually hard to argue against the large plane impact. I am hopeful that this debate will make a difference and encourage others to question their own confirmation biases, a bias that I have had to overcome when I really began to look at the evidence. Furthermore, I look forward to having a debate with a champion for one of the no plane or plane flyover proponents. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Okay. And finally, Barbara, with her 2.5-minute summary. Go ahead, Barbara. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. And again, thank you so much for the opportunity of this interaction with so many of you from the movement. Where I was when my time was up last time was the importance of the principle of severability. The main finding of my work is pre-placed explosives at the Pentagon. And this is also, as we know from the work of so many people, also the main story at the World Trade Center. We know at the World Trade Center that a plane impact was just a cover story for the destruction and collapse of the buildings in New York City. This is also the case at the Pentagon. My work shows it's also the case at the Pentagon. And that primary finding of pre-placed explosives as the real story at the Pentagon as at the World Trade Center stands independently of whether or not my separate finding that, yes, there was a large plane destroyed at the Pentagon, but not at the official story placed on the wall or at the official story time, is completely independent of that main finding. So I wanted to make that clear. I also wanted to make clear that my position is what I call a hybrid or a middle position between that of the citizens' investigation team and that of the official story light advocates like Wayne, at least in this debate. Mine is a hybrid or middle position that there was a plane destruction, a large plane destruction at the Pentagon, but no flyover, that the plane was destroyed instead. That it was destroyed near the wall, but did not impact the wall. What is some of the strongest evidence of that? There was no seismic signal found by any of the five closest readout stations to the Pentagon for an impact that the Pentagon Building Performance Report and the ASCE found was almost 100% on the ground floor, effectively at the ground. And yet we know that there were seismic signals for impacts at the World Trade Center dozens and dozens and dozens of floors higher than the ground. So the very fact that there was no seismic signal, and yet there's all the evidence of a large plane destruction, led me to the necessary conclusion, which was shocking to me, that a plane had to have been actually destroyed at the Pentagon but did not impact the wall. And like Wayne, I look forward to this series of debates and look forward to also debating with the SIT position. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Barbara. And with that, we conclude this debate. And first of all, I want to thank our two debaters who have done an outstanding job of presenting two positions and contending very forcibly with one another as to what happened at the Pentagon. Thank you also to Craig for his timing for keeping people on track. And now we're ready to entertain 20 minutes of a participant comment and questions to the to our commendable participants. Remembering that each person will have no more than 1 minute to make a comment or a question, and a response from the appropriate participants will also be limited to 1 minute. So we will go ahead and create a stack for the people that would like to make a question, pose a question, or make a comment, and that is open now. So who would like to be on the stack?
Dick Atlas.
Robin.
Robin. Dick Atlee. Who else?
Craig.
Craig. Who else?
Chris O'Coy.
Richard Coy. Richard Coy. Who else? Okay, I've got Robin, Dick, Craig, and Richard Coy. Who else would be like to be on the stack?
Adam Syed.
Adam Syed. Who else?
If you have to unmute to say if you want to be on the stack.
I just did, and this is Lorenzo Fine.
Lorenzo Fine. Okay, who else?
Possibly Lynn Bradbury.
Lynn Bradbury. Who else? Okay, we've got Robin, Dick, Craig, Richard Coyne, Adam Syed, Lorenzo Fine, and Lynn Bradbury. Would anybody else like to be on the stack before we proceed?
All right.
I'm sorry? Well, okay, so Robin, you're first.
Yeah, thank you. Very good job, both of you. I'm just sort of going to make a position statement here. I feel that the 9/11 Truth community is in a good place right now. This is sort of the last frontier. Specific shout out to the to a good, healthy approach at New Evidence held up by Cheryl Curtis in her dealing with the 28 minutes. And a shout out to Dave Schlesinger, who carries the biggest message, the most important message in 9/11 Truth, and that is outreach. I really simply want to make a statement where I have come from, being full circle all the way around. Generally, I cannot accept the flight data or radar information, and I'm moving to discovering a more thorough analysis of eyewitness reports. Here's where I sit. I believe that there was a impact of a large two underwinged air vehicle at the Pentagon that first hit the generator and then struck the side of the Pentagon in a slight left bank. No, see, I do not connect that with the C-ring and do not connect that with the lamp pole.
Time is up.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Robin. Okay. Dick, you're next.
Yeah, I'd like to ask both of them, and I certainly appreciate this, what they've done here. The one thing that Zit said I think would be helpful is to clarify the various reports about whether there was a significant amount of and smell of jet fuel in that area. I've heard contradictory reports, and I'm wondering what each of them has to say about that, since that would have a great deal of impact on whether there was a large plane that hit the wall.
Thank you, Dick. Okay, that's the question. Barbara, would you like to go first?
I think Wayne should go first, because he's always gone first.
All right, go ahead. Explain.
I don't think I've researched that enough to say much. I think Barbara's done the most research on this, and they talk about port on other things, but I think jet fuel was also mentioned, but I have not researched it sufficiently. Sorry, Dick.
Okay, thank you. Wait, Barbara?
Okay, well, the first thing that comes to mind, of course, this is spontaneous, but the first thing that comes to mind is, yes, there were lots of reports of you know, smoky, smelly fuel of that kind, but the problem is that you have the diesel generator trailer that's billowing with smoke from at least 9, 34, and 10 seconds. So you can't really be sure that that wasn't what people were referring to. Also, a leading edge of the wings, the official story has those wing tanks full of jet fuel hitting five light bulbs in a row that we know that
that would have sheared off the wing and, at a very minimum, spilled massive amounts of jet fuel over the lawn during the approach before it was impacted the wall if the official story were true. And there is simply no report by any witness of jet fuel on the lawn. And I, my final comment is, and I mentioned this is in my PowerPoint to it in the other part of the debate, but the temperature, the temperatures that actually melt the concrete and the external columns and some of the internal columns, and now those temperatures, just as at the World Trade Center, are far, far higher than you can get by burning jet fuel and office fires, far, far higher. So that would be my comment.
Okay, thank you, Barbara. Craig, you're next.
Yeah, this is a question I guess both can ask, but then first, I guess, for Wayne. If I understood you correctly, Wayne, at the beginning, you said that you thought it was not credible, the idea that the plane would have been level and just above the ground was not credible, and that what we saw in the video did not represent what you think would have happened. And I guess my question then is why would the video that was released be doctored to show a level impact if, in fact, an actual impact had taken place? Why would they need to doctor the video?
Well, so my response to that is I was discarding that as a point of evidence because it is so controversial, and it doesn't, and while it is, it would be nice if it would be supportive, it has enough problems that it appears to have been a doctored, or it could very well be a doctored photo or a series of photos. Reason for showing it is you want to show that something hit it, and they didn't want to provide too much information. I don't know. All I'm saying is that with the wrong date, with the problem that Mizuko pointed out, and also with the fact that it's not reasonable to expect that the plane would have tried to level off just before. Do a really critical maneuver like that when all you have to do is just fly straight down and continue on a downward sloping so that you could get the most momentum. To try to screw it up and level out doesn't seem reasonable, and the photos don't pick that up. And so it seems unsupportable, that's all.
Time is up. Okay, thank you for the response. Richard Korn.
Just a minute. I think that was to both of us.
I'm sorry?
I think that question was to both of us. I'd like to respond.
Well, he only asked it to Wayne.
Well, so I did say that folks could answer. I kind of did say that.
Okay. All right. Go ahead, Deborah.
Yeah, he did. I mean, I think that in general, you should open the responses to both of us, regardless.
No, in that case, he did request it of Wayne, so I only gave it to Wayne. But in your, since he did,
okay, yeah,
I'd like to respond to that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would refer people to my slides 16 and 17. They're very, very important slides that address this question. There's no question whatsoever remaining that the critical frame 23 of both of the two security camera videos, the outside security camera videos, were doctored. We know that at least one of the two were, as a result of the digital video analysis of one of Terry Misson's colleagues in France, and that is documented in Mizuko's 9/11 in New Pearl Harbor. But my own new analysis, which is much simpler, and that's in slide 17, I realized, like a bolt of lightning, a big light bulb, not too long ago, it only took me over 14 years to realize how simple the argument was, but it turns out that those security cameras take frames at 1 frame per second. And the official story has a plane coming in, a large plane coming in at about 560 miles per hour at the end. You can do the math, and Mark Snyder did the math. Okay, finish the sentence. Mark Snyder did the math, and the circle, the very minimum distance away from the alleged impact point of frame 23, is much further out beyond the Pentagon than either of the images in frame 23, so proving they were both doctors. Both of them were doctors.
Okay, thank you, Barbara. Adam Saeed. Wait a minute, sorry. Richard Kahn. You haven't gone yet. Richard Kahn. Go ahead.
Thanks. My question is, if the plane didn't strike the part of the Pentagon where the official story put it, then where would a large plane could have hit?
I take it that's to me, Barbara?
Well, like you said, I mean, both can answer, but I think you're obviously directed more to you.
Yes, okay, so I'll begin then. Okay, if I understand your question, it was a little bit scratchy. If it didn't hit at the official story, like impact point and column 14 and wedge 1, which is what Wayne advocates, along with everyone else who advocates official story height, where would it have? But the whole point of behind the smoke curtain is to marshal the evidence that a plane was destroyed further to the north or the left, closer to the Pentagon heliport, just before it would have otherwise hit the wall. And it probably was destroyed by some kind of remote signal that I believe, although it is not proven, but I believe that remote signal was probably put out by the military helicopter that was buzzing around the west side of the Pentagon at precisely that time and took off and left literally 3 seconds after the destruction of the state by the heliport. That's the answer to your question.
Thank you, Barbara. Wayne, do you have any response to that?
Well, I'll simply say that there's no evidence for such a plane having exploded in advance of or in front of the building, because if it was as first of all as at a very high altitude or four stories as the ground effects argument would put it, you'd have debris over a very very large range, including large parts, including wings and things like that, scattered around. So there's no evidence that a plane exploded outside the building. The impacting the wall, knocking it down, and going inside the building, the momentum continuing through the building, into the building, is just enough, and all it had to do was get inside the wall for virtually all of it to disappear. And that is, with the exception of the explosion, afterwards, that was witnessed by people on the street, there was no other significant debris. So that's all I'll say for now. Over.
Okay, thank you.
Could I rebut that?
No, you can't. No, sorry, Barbara. No, you can't. I'm sorry. Adam, sorry, it's your turn.
Yeah, this question is directed to Wayne. Wayne, I think I briefly heard you mention in your closing comments, you did briefly mention the north of Sitco flight path, and I'm just kind of curious, could you clarify your exact position on why exactly you think it is that it came in and struck the building specifically on the official flight path and hit those five specific light poles, and what would be your logic as to why all of those witnesses who reported the plane being not just north of the gas station, but crossing from the south of Columbia Pike to north of Columbia Pike and then flying directly over the Navy annex as well, all of that contradicts the official flight path? And this seems to me, I've watched all of Citizen Investigation Team's interviews and a few other independent interviews, and this flight path to me is pretty confirmed beyond a shadow of a doubt. So I'm curious as to how you grapple with that particular cumulative set of eyewitness testimony.
Well, you know, I'll take the statements of Daryl Donnelly, and if you go to my slide 19, because he's the guy that took the photographs. He said that it went over his head off the passenger side. Slide 19 shows you exactly where it is. That's where he was standing. All the other witnesses that I've heard or reviewed say that is the flight path, except the CIT video. And I must say that I was taken in. That was what I was going to promote in my cable access show, the CIT north of. But as I dug into it, I found that we have two sets of histories that are contradictory. And to me, by far, the strongest evidence is the witnesses of the day, not 6 years later, the witnesses of the day, and this is where they reported the plane having come and impacted. Over.
May I respond to that?
I guess, Barbara, go ahead.
Yeah. Regarding the north side versus the south side or the official story path, I would just like to say that, as I mentioned before, because the witnesses, even though there are about 180 of them, they're all over the map. They say large plane, small plane, missile with wings, a plane that only seats about 12 people. It goes on and on. White plane, silver plane. You have to choose. And one of the clinchers for me for preferring the north path is not only the sit witnesses, but the independent testimony of a witness, a very critical witness that sit doesn't even include, and that is Alan Wallace. Alan Wallace was one of the two firefighters who were outside the building that was almost killed by the plane that came in and exploded near the heliport. And he was very, very clear in his written report about it that it came, quote, north of the clover leaf. And north of the clover leaf simply has to be a north path. It has to be a north path.
Okay. Thank you. Lorenzo Klein.
I'm going to pass to Rich right now. Rich
O'Connor. All right. And Liz.
Did you say Lynn?
Yes.
Okay. I just remember hearing somebody knowledgeable, I don't remember who it was, and a long time ago, mentioning that they smelled a strong smell of cordite, and I would just like to ask Barbara and Wayne if he wants, what does that mean?
Okay. Wayne, you want to go first?
Somebody needs to mute, if you would. A lot of noise on the phone. Okay, starting my response to that. The smell of cordite was smelled by many, many, many people, including the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He said that the smell of cordite was overwhelming. And cordite is a coal-burning explosive that smells nothing like jet fuel, nothing like jet fuel at all, which is just one of the many, many lines of evidence in behind the smoke curtain, and also some of them that I include in my PowerPoint for this debate, that there were independent pre-placed inside the building, as well as outside the building, explosives that are the main story of the Pentagon. So that would be my... And I would like to add one other comment, and that is, earlier, Wayne made a comment that shows that he doesn't understand, I don't believe, my main position, and that is, he said that there's no evidence of a plane explosion because there was, evidence of a plane impact at the official story. Alleged impact point, that's the whole point. It's one or the other. And there's lots of evidence of a plane debris around the heliport and between the heliport and the wall. There's lots of evidence. And my position is simply that was caused by a plane being destroyed before it would have otherwise hit the wall, and we have multiple witnesses. Left wing hit the helipad before it exploded, and you would expect that. The left wing hit the helipad.
Okay. All right, then, Wayne, would you like to respond to Lynn's request?
Yeah. I have no independent confirmation about the court. I've seen the reports, and one of the things that I did include in my PowerPoints was the ASCE comments about the slab on the second floor being uplifted, and that was on my slide 39. That suggests that there was explosives. And then Barbara, of course, has done a lot more research on what happened deep inside the Pentagon in the A and B ring. And there's a lot of devastation, and from my independent research, it seems like that was in fact something that happened, but I'm not going to talk about that anymore. That's all I've got. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Wayne. All right. Well, we've reached the end of this segment of our program tonight. And I first of all want to thank both of our opponents Wayne for the affirmative and Barbara for the negative in debating the question of whether a negative, a large plane impacted the Pentagon. And we are now, I want to remind all of you that you're invited to go to the linked survey to weigh in on whether you think Wayne or Barbara or neither or both presented the more credible and cogent argument for tonight's debate. And we'll publish those results hopefully in the minutes, but in any case, at some point, we'll let people know how the debate went tonight. Now, we're ready to move on to the second part of tonight's agenda, and that would be the question of where we go from here. And the first person to address that will be Craig, who graciously deferred in the last debate to make sure that it could be done in a versus B format. But he will now be given the opportunity to pose the next debate challenge, and we'll go from there. So, Craig?
Yeah, thank you. I think what makes the most sense would be then for myself or someone else representing the no impact position, I guess, which is kind of people are calling the citizen investigation position, but it's not you know entirely that. But no plane hitting the building. It would make sense to have that me or someone from that point of view debating Wayne first. That would be my proposal. So I would suggest that for the January call.
So are you willing to yourself debate Wayne? Is that your challenge?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we did talk on the December call kind of informally about whether, you know, anybody minded if a second person were involved sort of within the same time limit, and nobody seemed to have a problem. So if we had somebody else sort of do a rebuttal,
mm-hmm.
you know, from that same position, as long as people don't mind, then that might be a possibility.
Okay. So I understand that Craig is volunteering to debate from the negative in a future debate on this question. Would anybody like to respond from the positive and be willing to debate Craig again if we take this question up again?
Yeah, so this is Wayne. So I'm unclear what the actual debate would be on. That there was no impact at the Pentagon?
Yeah. No large plane hit the
Pentagon.
That's what we just debated. Well, that's true, but that's my position, and your position and mine do differ, Barbara, so...
Okay. Yeah,
I have a different sort of position on why that's true.
Yeah, Wayne. Look, to make this clear, Craig, your position is that no plane was destroyed at the Pentagon.
Well, I would. Well, if we're gonna sort of deal with the fact that it's the same position, we could say that no large plane hit the Pentagon or was destroyed anywhere near it.
Okay, so that would be different from Barbara's position in that regard. And Wayne, would you be willing to repeat the debate with giving Craig an opportunity to take the negative?
Yeah. So the debate would be, and it would be the difference, but it would be no large plane was destroyed at the Pentagon.
Yes. I think that's
right.
That's
yeah, good. I realized that after I said it didn't make sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
No large mm-hmm. plane was destroyed at the Pentagon. Hmm.
Yeah. Are you willing to take that?
I guess so. That's never been how I've phrased my position before, but
yeah. It sounds like your position, Craig and Wayne, would you be willing to take the positive on that and debate it again?
Yes, and that would require a different perspective, but
mm-hmm.
Yes, but Craig, is that the right phrase for what you want to talk
well,
about?
Well, to be honest, not really, but I mean, it makes it different from
what you're debating tonight, I guess, but really my position is that, you know, no plane hit the building, and your position is a plane did hit the building. So I wonder if it really matters whether the question is the same or not. You know, I don't know.
I think, to be fair about this, Craig would like the opportunity to debate you as well, Wayne, but he deferred to Barbara because Barbara wanted to debate it also.
Could Craig put his position in a more positive framework of what didn't happen, but what he really thinks happened so we can understand where he's coming from?
Well, I believe, well, okay, but this is not, I'm not saying this is the question that I want the debate to be on, but my position is that a plane did approach the building but did not hit it. Therefore, it had to have flown over.
Well,
this is Barb. I'd just like to throw in here that I know that Craig didn't prefer to have a three-way debate, but it just seems to me, because my position is so much closer to the TIP position, it's basically the TIP position except no flyover. Could we consider having a three-way debate?
I think Barbara, to be fair about this, that the reason Craig deferred was that he did not want to have a three-way debate, and therefore he would like the opportunity to debate one-on-one the question of whether or not there was even a large plane involved in the Pentagon. I think that's what we're trying to deal with here, is to give him an opportunity to debate one-on-one with someone as to whether or not there was a large plane in any way involved with the Pentagon, other than
a
flyover.
I'm just saying that it seems to me that I would be the logical debate partner for that proposition. However, if the proposition were that there was a flyover at the Pentagon and stating it affirmatively, then it might make more sense that Wayne be the debater.
Yeah, but that's not what I want to put forward.
Well, how about saying it in a negative way then? That there was no negative plane destruction at the Pentagon.
I guess that covers where I'm coming from, I suppose.
Would you be willing to debate that, Dwayne?
Yes, it sounds like we're talking about the semantics for...
Yeah,
the
it does, actually.
So I have got two versions here that I wrote down. One is no large plane was destroyed at the Pentagon.
Yeah.
And the other one is no plane hit the building.
Yeah.
And the first one sounds like a better debate frame.
Yeah. I think that's what it sounds like, Craig is willing to debate. So would you be willing to take that on next time?
Yeah, I can do that. And
okay. Great. All right. So we've got our proposition for the next debate, and that would be our next topic, Wayne versus Craig.
I would just like to jump in, Mrs. Barb, and say that I hope that there will be a third debate between Craig and myself.
Okay. Well, did you create a topic that would be controversial between you and Craig, okay? And it's proposed at the next teleconference, okay?
Okay.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay, Mark, it seems like to me with three people, I think it's going to be fun debate. It'd just be a little bit longer, but I'm more than willing to stay on through three at a time because I really learn a lot more from the multiplicity of people.
I'm sorry, who's speaking right now?
Jane Clark from Texas.
Okay.
And
I understand your position, but it seemed like Craig was not interested in three-way debate. He felt that it would be less than productive. It's an interesting debate in itself, but the parties involved, all three of them, did not feel that a three-way debate would be productive. But
Barb, just for the record, I did. And this is Lynn, and I would too, or at the very least, hearing Barbara against Craig.
So the option is still open for the next teleconference that Barb will come up with a topic that Craig would be willing to debate with her, and that would give us a third way to go with this. Okay.
Yeah. So this is Lane. I want to support that because one of the debates too is a crystallize where all of us are coming from, and then after the next debate, we'll have a better idea where we want to go after that. So I think the two-person debate will be very informative, and then we can figure out where to go from there.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I guess we're all set on that. And I'm sorry, who?
Lynn, just for a minute, and I would just like to say that I liked how Barbara tried to point out points of agreement between hers and Wayne's position. I think that is
okay.
Robin on the set.
Go ahead, Robin.
Yes, I think you opened this, Ken, by saying the segment is what's next, and my broader view is I think that most of the comments and the perspective and evidence gathered here leads to, I think, an eventual annual or semi-annual or every other year meeting and conference in the Washington, D.C., in the Pentagon area, where we have a conference where people can take hours and have very healthy back and forth, 3-, 4-, 5-way debates as a conference point of view. So that's the grand scope. That's the way I would like us to be going forward. Number one, number two, I think that the 9/11 Truth community should get together and commit to a reevaluation and 4D diagram and geographical layout of the Pentagon so that each eyewitness can be evaluated in a very, very thorough way, since there's so much dependency and cherry-picking on different eyewitnesses. I think this would be very, very telltale. And then spinning off of that one, for those who are continuing some research into what went on at the Pentagon and the aviation elements, okay, so there are 2 points. It's pretty stunning to me how many people say that the FDR data is unreliable, but then they use the high-speed flight of that air vehicle as evidence of it can do this, it can't do that, et cetera, et cetera. So I think you have to do it one way or the other. You either buy the FDR evidence or you don't. And what I will say to you is that it's the flight data recorder is unreliable, and I am using some eyewitnesses developed by CIT and others, okay, to make the point that the aircraft was much more slow flying and therefore much more capable of maneuvering. And everybody who uses the flight data recorder and these speeds are writing into their analysis an error from the beginning. So that's just a thought.
Thank you. Your time is up. Thank you. Thank you for that comment.
All right.
Who was
speaking?
Robert Horgan. Okay, so now we're ready.
On a survey, which is...
I'm sorry, who's speaking right now?
I'm sorry, this is Dick Atley.
All right, go ahead.
Survey question one has other, but when you choose other and type something in, it says the question requires an answer. It won't accept that. It isn't a choice, unfortunately.
I'm sorry, repeat that text, please.
Question one has 4 choices and then a box for other.
Mm-hmm.
The box for other, if you fill it in, not checking any of the other ones, this the survey will not permit you to complete because it says that...
Okay.
It was unfortunately not constructed properly for question one.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I'll go back and try to amend that. This is a new process for us, so we'll have to... Weird. So you're saying if you don't answer one of the other 4 questions first, that try to answer the other one...
Yeah, I would suggest that people who want to would put that down in the comments at the end, whatever they wanted to say there.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that. Okay. Okay.
I have a question of clarification, Ken, about the survey. It's Barb.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my understanding from your agenda
is that there's going to be a week where people, you're going to be sending the link for the audio immediately as usual, and that there will be a week for others to listen to it and also go to the survey. Is that right?
No, the link was sent out with the draft agenda, so people who are on this call should already have received that link in their draft agenda and should just go to it and fill it out.
Right, that wasn't my question. My question is for those who weren't able to be on this call, but did receive your draft agenda with the link, your draft agenda says that they'll have a week to listen to the whole debate on the audio file. And
that's
they
correct.
Can also go to the survey. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now let's move on to number three on our draft agenda, which is number four on the draft agenda, which is Craig and McKee reporting on his targeting for his activism online. Go ahead, Craig.
I just had an interesting experience with a couple of other people in the movement. One in particular, a gentleman who some people might know named Ken Dock, who runs the largest 9/11 Facebook group, that has almost 40,000 members. Anyway, he's got a page up on his website now that calls me a disinfo troll and accuses me of supporting the theories that space beams were used to destroy the towers, and that hologram planes were used, which is false, and I've never, ever taken those positions, and so he's doing this quite deliberately, and this goes back to an article I wrote almost a year ago where I criticized another gentleman on the site named Mike Collins, who is a real troll who kind of goes on and just destroys sort of any discussion that he's involved in. By kind of insulting and attacking people. So I criticized the way that was being handled. And so Collins has done the same thing. And there's a third person that's done it as well, including writing to Richard Gage and telling Richard Gage that, you know, watch out for this guy because he supports space beams and holograms and, you know, missiles at the Pentagon and all this sort of stuff. So anyway, I do have an article that I'm going to sort of put out about this on my blog, but it's just kind of I guess I just thought it would be interesting to sort of mention it and see if that sort of if that's something anybody else has experienced. But I mean, literally, it's one thing to have people kind of attack you for something that they don't like about you or they don't agree with in terms of your position, but it's really interesting to have three different people, but they all know each other, by the way, three different people try to attach me to the theories that I absolutely don't believe. So that's kind of the gist of it. So I kind of debated for quite a long time, like, should I respond? Does this make it worse? Does this kind of reinforce the idea that we're all fighting in the movement and all that? And I sort of bounced it off a few people who I trust, and then I kind of reached the conclusion that it's not something I can just let go. You know, when somebody's, it's one thing to attack somebody, but to sort of libel them by telling them telling the world that they believe something they don't believe, then, you know, that's just not something I can let go. So anyway, so I will be responding to it. So I guess that's it. I don't know if anybody else has any comments.
Craig, more than one person denounced you to Richard Gray, Richard Gage,
yeah,
regarding this, right?
Yes, two of them. Mike Collins did it, and then this other guy who I know from my hometown here, actually in Montreal, name is Seb Menard. He created the 9/11 Questions website, and he got really angry at me because I pointed out to him that all the articles on his website are essentially plagiarized because... And I was working with him on this site, and then I didn't realize this, but what he's just done is taken articles from all over the internet, thrown them on his website, and just put "by 9/11 questions." So I tried to, you know, me and two other administrators that were helping him with his Facebook page tried to say, look, you can't do that because that's, you know, you can't just claim credit for an article that you didn't write, and I mean, one of them's even USA Today, so I'm sure they'd be thrilled. So he then turned around and wrote to Richard as well and basically said, you know, said that I'm into shooting wood and no planes, and he even said that my website covers everything from aliens to the moon landing, which is kind of funny since I've never actually covered either one.
Okay. So. Thank you, Craig. Okay, so Dave would like to be in the stack. Who else would like to be in the stack?
Robin.
Barbara. Who else?
Robin.
Richard Coley.
Robin. Richard. Who else?
Jane Clark.
I'm sorry, who?
Jane Clark.
Jane? Okay, who else? Okay, so Dave, you're first?
Yes, I try not to miss any opportunities to speak against accusing people of bad faith, which is what has been done to you. It should be done the way you did it. You say, you know, I didn't say this, and, you know, it's an evidentiary issue as opposed to I can tell what's in your head and you're a disinfo agent. Nobody should call anybody a disinfo agent ever under any conditions. If you don't agree with someone, discuss what they've said and what they've done. We do have people in the truth movement who have been willing to do mediation. And I do think that if there was more of that, it would be better, because something should be able to be worked out. I'm not saying you have to work out with any given person, but I'm saying that it would be better if more people in the truth movement were open to that. And will I have a minute to mention my Martin Luther King stuff before the end of the call?
If it's enough, for sure.
Okay. Very good.
Thank you.
Yes.
Can I throw
a quick comment in here, Ken, just to respond to Dave on one small
yeah,
point?
Yeah, go ahead.
Dave said you can't, you know, call someone a disinfo agent. I forget how you worded it, but so the point that I'm making in this article is that yes, disinformation is false information that you know is false. So in fact, what these three people have done is disinformation, and that's not a subjective thing, in my opinion. You know, it's not subjective because they have no quote that they can base their claim on. So they know it's false. Therefore, they are actually peddling disinformation.
Okay. Barbara, you next?
Okay, yeah. I just like to second what the gist of what Dave Blessinger said. The way I put it is the proper response to bad speech is true speech. So, unfortunately, what we're talking about here is a classic tactic of divide and conquer, which is, Cat's Sunstein, cognitive dissonance. The way you create cognitive dissonance is to have trolls who go around making straw man arguments about the positions of serious people in the movement just to knock them down. And that's happened with Smoke Curtain, and I'm going to be responding to similar statements of straw man arguments about Smoke Curtain in the future. So we just need to, I'm glad that you're doing the article, Craig, because that's the proper response. That's it.
Thanks, Barbara.
Okay. Thank you. And I'm sorry, I can't read my writing on who was next. Beginning with an R.
Robin.
Go ahead, Robin.
The reason I kind of jumped back on this teleconference for a bit, because this subject is very interesting to me, and I'm still hard at it, but I also listen to the monthly teleconferences as Ken sends them out, and I was extremely upset several months ago, Craig, by you in what I consider to be outlandish, vitriolic claims and whatever it might be about Jenkins' eyewitness thing, and then David Chandler's presentation, which I find both are amazingly deficient. I took my time to go out of my way to have private conversations that allowed me to show them why I'm so dissatisfied and underwhelmed by that point of view. But in taking time to do that, I didn't take time to go outboard. So as far as I'm concerned, your mouth and your attitude has drawn the exact ire that one would expect from that type of speak. There's a much better way to handle this. There was a much better way to handle that. And Dave Schlesinger, once again, okay, knocks on the most important bell in the 9/11 truth community. Outreach and civil behavior. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to respond to that. I need to respond to that. All right. I would be I very much like to hear what you specifically find outlandish in what I wrote. I think I was very, very clear on what I was saying. I didn't make some personal attacks. I was very specific about what they were saying and responding to it, and also responding to the disingenuous nature of some of the arguments that they were making in those two presentations. And I think I was very thorough in explaining why they were disingenuous. And, you know, it's interesting, you say that I was vitriolic, but it's okay, I guess, if David Chandler equates citizen investigation with disinformation and no claims and powers and any sort of
theory. Now, there you go again, putting words in my mouth. I didn't say that.
Don't put anything into my mouth that I didn't say.
Craig, I didn't say that.
Yeah, no. Let Craig finish his comment, and then you can get back on the stand. Okay? Craig, please continue.
Right. So what I'm saying is that my response was in light of what I think they were saying that was not... Well, disingenuous is the first word that comes to mind, and this is a difficult thing to sort of have this out in a 5-minute conversation, because I could give very specific reasons why I wrote every sentence that I wrote in those two articles, and you're making it sound like I'm mousing off. In fact, you used the word mouse, I believe. I think I was very strong in my criticism, but I think my criticism was justified. Okay, I think you had it in your mind. You even wrote to me in an email that you thought that I was, making personal attacks, but you never were able to supply an example of what personal attack you were talking about, because I didn't make any.
When you raise the point about mind control or MK Ultra or things like that, or I wonder what happened to these guys, whatever. I heard this on the teleconference.
I didn't say that.
I heard you, and I heard Richard talking about it. I'm just trying to tell you, okay? You're getting You're getting stuff fed back at you because of your irresponsible approach to
That is ridiculous, Robin. You're talking about somebody else bringing up the subject of MKUltra. I did not bring it up, and you're blaming me because I prompted that.
That
makes no sense. Okay, I'm responsible for what I write, and I'll take responsibility for defending what I write, but I'm not going to take responsibility for what other people say.
I'm assessing you with the responsibility for being a very active participant in undermining those people with that point of view. It is not necessary, and it should end. Deal with it the way that David Schlesinger suggests.
I respectfully disagree, and I think if anybody wants to go back and read those articles, they will see that I am making an argument that has nothing to do with personalities or anything. It's very clear what I'm saying.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you. Let's go on to the next person. That would be Richard. Go ahead, Richard.
I'm withdrawing myself right now.
Okay. Leadership, Richard?
I guess I'd just like to just make a general comment about the whole conference. Mark McCurdick once made a comment about the Pentagon, that it doesn't really matter what hit the Pentagon. The real question is, why did it hit the Pentagon? an hour after being hijacked.
I would like to break in for 1 second and say that somebody's breathing awfully heavily right next to the phone, and it's extremely distracting.
Very well. That's very true. And if you have a star 6, please press star 6, and the rest of us won't need to hear that loud breathing. Thank you very much. Okay. Go ahead, Richard.
I just wanted to point out, Mark McCurdick once said something to me about the Pentagon that stuck with me. It's kind of the wrong question, what hit the Pentagon. The right question is, why did anything hit the Pentagon almost an hour after planes started getting hijacked? I mean, we should have been defended.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very good point.
Okay.
Mark, Barb on the deck.
And thanks for finally, Jane, you have is your share?
Well, you know, really, I don't think I do have a comment. I just think that we just all need to be reasonable with each other. There are people that get their egos involved here, but we have to remember that we're fighting to try to get our country back to where it was.
Okay. Thanks, Jay.
Barbara.
I'm sorry. Ooh, Barbara?
Yes, uh-huh.
All right, go ahead, Barbara.
Yeah, just briefly in response to, I believe, was that Richard Coyne's point about why did anything hit the Pentagon? Number one, the question from my research is not what hit the Pentagon, but if anything hit the Pentagon. As you know, I believe that the evidence shows that a plane was destroyed there without hitting the wall at the official storage place in time. But more importantly than that, I think that the... if you go to behind the smoke curtain, and I would like to say that in the draft agenda, that the link to my behind the smoke curtain was the original and not the updated and slightly corrected second edition. So I'd like to, if I could, can send that to you and Craig and have that replaced,
sure,
the link for the second edition.
Sure.
But anyway, bottom line answer to the question is, if you go to smoke curtain, both the first and the second updated and corrected edition, you will see the evidence that the building, that the plane was a military plane, that it was one of ours, that it had to have been squawking a friendly FOA signal, friend or foe, and that that's the reason that it happened, because it was all intended to happen. So it's not that the building wasn't defended. The Pentagon attacked itself for the purposes that we all understand on 9/11. So I would just refer you to behind the smoke curtain to answer your question. And finally, as you will see in my slides for this debate, as well as in smoke curtain, I believe, certainly the updated second edition of smoke curtain, we now know from the now released staff interview of the 9/11 commission staff interview with Douglas Cochrane, who was it was originally believed that he was the young man who came into the PIOC with Cheney, saying that the plane was 50, 30, 10 miles out. He makes it clear that the discussion was about a shoot-down order, not a stand-down order. So I just wanted to make that clear. And also, I now understand from David Cole's research that it was actually not Cochrane, but Captain Anthony Barnes who actually reported on the plane to Cheney. But it still stands from both of their now-released interviews, and you can get those from David Cole, that it was a shoot-down order, not a stand-down order that was being discussed in the PIOC.
Okay. Thank you, Barbara. All right. Now, we have time for just announcements, and then we're going to close. Who would like to share an announcement?
Dave Schlesinger.
Wayne.
Dave, and then Wayne. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, a couple times ago, I announced that I went to Atlanta to the Martin Luther King Center, and there's no mention of the Memphis 99 trial, where it took an hour for the jury to decide that the official story was a lie and Ray was a patsy and the government did it. And it's very unfortunate that there is no mention in the two different buildings where they could mention it, that it's not mentioned at all. The one building even says that the fellow who did it was got away, but then was captured, and they're referring to Ray without his name. In any case, all I'm looking I've attempted to be in dialogue with the center. They sort of have. All I'm looking for right now is for anybody else who wants me to keep them posted on this effort. Because we have a bunch from the, but this is a large call, so there's probably some people here who would find the issue of the suppression of the murder of King interesting, particularly since so many people take the attitude that they won't believe 9/11 was an inside job because they don't believe our own government could be that evil. Anybody out there want to stay in touch with me?
Why don't we just, anybody who's interested, email you and say yes, how's that?
In the past, people have actually said they were interested, but obviously they can. They'll be more likely to forget if they don't do it right now.
Would anybody like to be added to Dwayne, to the email list for Dave for this question? Please let him know right now.
I would, Barbara.
Barbara, okay.
Jane Clark, I would.
Great. Jane Clark, okay. Who else?
Yeah, Sue Wayne. Serpa.
Wayne, I got you. I got Sue, okay.
Okay. Anybody else?
Yeah, David Carol Cole. Curtis, I think I'm already on it, though.
You're on it.
Okay.
Okay, who else?
David Cole.
Okay.
David, okay. Who else? Okay, there we go. All
thanks
right.
So much.
And
appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay, and I'm sorry. Who else wanted to make an announcement?
I'd like to, Cheryl.
Cheryl, yeah, but before Cheryl, somebody else had already mentioned
Wayne.
That they wanted to be... Wayne, yeah, go ahead, Wayne.
Yes. So I just want to mention that up on our website, 911truthoutreach.org, we have three new articles of some interest. One is about Matt Campbell, who is trying to raise funds to open a legal case in the U.K. About the death of his brother. We have an article up there about that. We have an article about some 9/11 Truth Outreach, some 9/11 activists doing some outreach in Florida, and I also did an article about the deceleration of the plane's tail as it's impacted and moved towards the South Tower. That was United Airlines Flight 175. And so we've got some details. It's basically research that was done many years ago, but apparently has been forgotten. And it's, I mean, very interesting. That's all. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Wayne. And Cheryl.
Yeah, I just wanted to let people know, if they don't already, that Christopher Boleyn is on tour in January and February in the U.S., starting in Florida, going out to California, Oregon, Washington, D.C. And you can see his website is Boleyn.com.
Okay. Thank you, Cheryl. Okay, and again, remember, everyone, you were given a link on the draft agenda to go to after this debate and register your opinion as to who won the debate or whether you think anyone did, and your comments on the parameters of the debate so that we can improve them in the future. And with that said, we'd like to thank everyone and wish everyone a happy new year, and look forward to seeing you on the last Wednesday of January back here again for the next series of debates. Good night.
Thank you, everybody.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.